Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I want to give a big thank you to Bob Heideman, who will be speaking with us this hour. Bob is Senior Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at A.O. Smith Corporation. This interview is an element of IRI's Digital Transformation Community. The DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital transformation. Through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content. The latest one on USG is available on our website. We also have a virtual conference dedicated to digital transformation, and it's called Digital Futures, and that's taking place October 12th through the 15th. We have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics like COVID-19 and the impact of that on digital transformation. I can send you an invitation if you're interested, just let me know. We do updates with insights and additional resources, and we have workshops that we're planning out, virtual ones, obviously, on key pain points. And then we do these monthly interviews with thought leaders. These always take place on the third Thursday of the month at noon Eastern Time. I'm going to be sure to sign all of you up to receive updates on the DXC, and if you don't wish to receive them, just let me know. I have a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Bob. First, this session is being recorded, and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so apart from the video, we will not have any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question in, and I will read it out for you. Or you can raise your hand using that function on the dashboard and I will unmute you. Please be sure to minimize any background noise if you choose that option. All right, let's go ahead and get started. Thanks for joining me today, Bob. Our first question. So, what has been A.O. Smith's response to the pandemic?
For those unfamiliar with A.O. Smith, we're a manufacturer of water heaters and water purifiers. And so we were deemed an essential manufacturer. So while we sent nearly all of our salaried employees to go work from home for almost 12 weeks, we did keep our engineering facilities open and operating, but albeit at a very low level. So we did have people so we could continue our work. From a corporate standpoint, what we've really focused on, once people were at home, getting them productive, keeping them productive. But because we also were an essential manufacturer, it gave us the opportunity to figure out how to best deal with the COVID in a COVID environment. And our priority as a corporation has been to keep our employees safe. And so we've done whatever we can to create the social distancing, to protect the employees and keep them separated. We have had a number of COVID positive cases that we've dealt with. We have a standard protocol that we use in all our facilities when that happens, and we've tried to become more proactive with our deep cleaning and fogging procedures to avoid shutting down our facilities. We started to bring more people back in May. And then through June, and as of today, I think we're at about 80 or 85% of our employees are back. The ones that aren't back would either be very high-risk employees or office complexes where we're just not able to create the social distancing that we need to keep people safe. In addition, we do take everybody's temperatures at all our facilities when they come in the morning, and if they're hot, they get a second chance to pass. And if they don't pass, then they're sent home and advised to contact a medical professional. We also require mask wearing in and out of our facilities. We require mask of all our visitors, and we require our employees to wear masks when they're moving about the facility and where they're not going to be able to maintain that required social distance. We have a travel ban in place now through August 31, and a restriction on visitors to our facilities. So unless you're essential to keep us operating, chances of any visitor coming into our facility is pretty low, as well as if you're an employee and need to travel, the likelihood of getting approval for travel is pretty limited and pretty restrictive. And again, it's all aimed at protecting our employees. And I think the thing that we really tried to do as a senior leadership team was be as transparent as possible about what was happening, why we were doing it, and making sure our employees were constantly informed about positive cases, what was done in the result of a positive case. And even in the case of, we have had a couple of deaths, and we've made those known to our employees as well. So
that's done.
Well, yep, it's very unfortunate. We were just talking as a senior leadership team this morning that things like that really weigh on you when that happens. So,
yeah, certainly.
But for the most part, we haven't necessarily had, and really what the direction I think we're going to see us go in the future is from a COVID is we're going to try to do more communication about reminding people it's not what you do at work that matters as much as what you do at home and outside of work that matters. So we've only had a few cases of where COVID has been transferred in our facilities. The vast majority of the cases we see are people coming into the facility that bring it in and we catch them, or they feel sick and they go home and they test positive, but they're not picking it up in our facilities. I think that's something everyone's going to grapple with here soon is, how do you make sure people are taking the same precautions they do at work outside of work?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
how has it impacted your digital transformation?
I don't think it's had a dramatic impact on our digital transformation. In some cases, it's maybe sped up some of our non-product related digital activities, when you look at like remote training, which is probably the biggest one where we've been doing remote training for a number of years now of our customer base for our product training. But I think in some cases there still was, in parts of our business, there was still a fair amount of on-site training happening. And that's had to all shift to some sort of digital format. And then probably the only other thing it's impacted us on is we've all, like everybody on the call, I'm sure, have gotten used to doing a Zoom or comparable meeting format. And I think we've gotten pretty good at dealing with it. But I think also most people are longing for that face-to-face meeting, even if it's 6 feet apart or it's a restricted number. I think people, there's still nothing that takes the place of being in the same room with somebody.
So taking a step back, how did A.O. Smith get started with digital transformation in general?
So the digital transformation at A.O. Smith, I would say, started at a product level, kind of thinking about connected appliances. And that was probably the first start. As we started to go down that path, I think we started to see some of the difficulties of connecting a water heater, as an example. Where is the value to the end consumer? So early on, when you only had 6 apps on your phone, nobody thought anything of adding an app to your phone. Now, if you tell me I need an app on my phone, it's like, I already got way too many apps on my phone. And if I'm only going to interact with it once in 7 years or never, it's hard to convince me that I need to take up that space and deal with it. And if I need it, I'm not even going to know I have it, right? So I think as we started our digital strategy, we were trying to find the value to the consumer. And originally even, and this goes back probably 10 years now, or maybe a little more, we came out with connected commercial water heaters. And the thought was we would give a very entry-level connectivity suite to our customers, and then we would get some sort of monthly fee or annual fee to give them more detail, to give them alerts. Well, that was pretty clear that even though that was a minor amount for a commercial application, no one really was willing to pay us for it. So we've continued down that path, but I think along the way, we said, okay, we kept asking ourselves, where can we create value to the customer? And where does the customer need to touch us? We started to migrate in our digital strategy to what I call customer lead generation, or helping the customer buy the right product, or helping our installers, our customers who would doing the installation, helping them deal with that side of life. And that, because now they're touching the product. And whereas once it's installed, the number of times someone touches one of our products is pretty low on a consumer or even a commercial level. It has a pretty high uptime. And I talked to a gentleman about this that was working in the consumer space, and he referred to being a struggle in connected appliances if you don't have a high touch intensity, meaning unless I interact with my appliance every day, the likelihood of me really finding value in it being connected is pretty low. Even though I can alert you ahead of time that it might fail, you know what, it only happens once every 12 or 13 years. It's probably not enough that I'm going to sign up for or spend the money on having it connected. I mean, you can even use your thermostat as an example, right? I mean, there's multiple companies out there selling smart thermostats for your house, and you buy it, you put it on your phone, and it's really cool at first. And now, if you look at it once a month, it's probably a lot for the average person. Now, there's always the people out there that are on it all the time, but anyway, so we migrated from product to lead generation and helping our customer when they're touching our product, but we've never lost the product piece. We continue to drive that product piece to figure out where can we get value along the way to drive the value chain. And so that's probably, it's definitely a journey for us. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you we've got the connected water heater figured out how we drive customers to it, because it's definitely something we're still trying to understand how we get people engaged and seeing value and paying us for it.
So just a follow-up to what you said there. So was the main push from senior leadership in looking at the product, or was it more kind of a grassroots and you saw kind of individual teams starting to build to that?
So I'd say it was the initial product was definitely from grassroots in the organization, believing that if you connect it, you can monitor it, you can alert people. If you can alert someone to a problem, there should be value there. Because while you don't touch your water heater a lot, you rely on it every day to give you hot water no matter where you are. And if you don't have hot water, there's a likelihood that you're not going to be out of it very long because you're so used to having it. And so we believe that there would be value there. The downside was that it's highly reliable. So, I mean, if you think about it, a commercial water heater is well over 99% uptime. So it doesn't fail very often. When it does, it's a crisis, but it's just not something that happens very often. And then, so one was grassroots. We also had a couple major customers that were really pushing their smart home platforms at the time. And in both cases, those have since, and so we were asked to bring them solutions that would integrate with their smart home hubs. And since then, they've all dropped those product lines.
Okay.
Because
So,
Echo and Google and places like that have really taken over the smart home world.
yeah, that's true. So, given all that you learned and that kind of journey that you went through of trying to figure out what would work, so what do you think is key to A. O. Smith's digital strategy now?
I think there's two keys. On the product side, we've had some success in other countries where we do a rental business, and monitoring a fleet of rental products brings us value because now we can monitor their performance and dispatch service ahead of time to make sure they don't go down, and schedule service to optimize, our maintenance of the product. And I've heard that from others too, fleet management and understanding how your fleet's being used, where it is, can really bring good value to it. And then the other side is, you know, that we like is this whole use your digital strategy when you're going to be able to touch the customer. And I think that's been very helpful, whether it be from a training perspective or from a product selection perspective or from a lead generation perspective. And then use their follow-up information, right? So there's a lot more reviews online now than there ever was, and that's a good source of what do customers not like about our products or what do they like about our products, and use that as we look at our product planning cycle and what we can do.
Okay. And you know, what's the biggest success that you've had?
I think our biggest success has been around some product selection tools and our digital training in parts of our business. That along, and we're a little bit neophytes yet, but in other countries, I think this whole fleet management opportunity of our rental business is pretty attractive. But that's a very early stage yet.
And so, you know, in addition to all, you know, trying to figure out the right fit for where you should be going digital with the product line, you know, what other challenges have you faced?
I think the biggest challenge we face is trying to find where the customer will put value on a connected product. You know, we still continue in our commercial products. I mentioned how we made the, you know, we tried to sell the service early on. Now we give, it's included in the product. Yet we still struggle, even though we provide a connectable appliance at a commercial level where you'd think people would care about monitoring everything in their building. We still struggle to get it connected to the people's Wi-Fi systems. And I think that is going to be a major struggle for some time until we find that value that the customer says, I really want to do this and I find value in it. And I think that's still the thing we struggle most with is in our industry, what's the hook that's going to get the customer to want to connect it?
Okay. And so kind of shifting to more of your internal focus. So what is your data strategy?
So it's been something that's been evolving. And so today we've actually hired a data scientist and we work with data scientists to analyze our data and bring our data in and put it in a structured format in a common place so that everyone can access it. As well as bringing the data in just to collect the data. You know, one of the things he learned is we don't have that many connected appliances, but you can generate a lot of data in a big hurry. And so we've started to think about how you control the amount of data you take so that you're only taking data, for example, when the appliance is on, as opposed to, you know, every so many milliseconds or every so many seconds or once an hour. When we started, it just did downloads every so often, and we had to move to more of a, then you have all this non-usable data because it's not when the appliance is firing. So, and then we bring that data through a cloud and through a service that we use, and then it gets downloaded and put into a dashboard so that multiple people can use it. And then we work with a data scientist on looking at it. But I think we still have some room to grow there as far as how we better manage that data and use the data.
So, do you have any protocols in place for, you know, how the data is brought in and just to maintain the integrity of it?
Yeah, that we do, and that comes from our provider so that it always comes in the same, and where it gets stored and how we store it has been very rigid so that it isn't just going, you know, people just don't willy-nilly go out and grab the data off our cloud provider. It all comes into it, goes into a depository, and then people can access that data that have permission.
Okay.
But you can't go in and necessarily do anything. You can only access it. You can't manipulate it per se. I mean, you can't go in and change the data. The data is locked.
Okay. So how are you using sensors and AI? It sounds like that might be something key to your organization.
Yeah, in the sensor and AI world, I mean, we are early, probably 15, about 13, 14 years ago, we decided that we wanted to put more emphasis on sensors because we believed that the sensing technology was key to controlling our products better, making them more efficient. And so we built a sensor team. And we've been looking at how do we leverage sensors either to predict failures, or to improve performance or to improve safety of our products. And so our sensor strategy is if we can acquire a sensor from someone that already makes it, that would be our first choice. If what we want is not readily available, then we will work on our own to develop our own sensor. And the challenge in the sensor world for us has been cost, right? So there's sensors out there that will do a lot of things, but if it's going to be $150 or $200 or $1,000 in our volumes, that's just a non-starter. So the biggest challenge in the sensor world for us is finding sensors that are cost effective. But then also because we work in the water space, as soon as you start touching water, or even combustion, you have a pretty harsh and variable environment that it gets difficult to reproduce the results of the sensor in all the conditions that you need to. So as an example, we do water purification. Many people would like a low-cost heavy metal sensor. There's sensors out there. And people will get very excited and they'll say, look, I can measure lead in DI water. Well, that's nice. Can you measure lead in tap water? Oh, yeah. And they show you they can measure lead in tap water. And then you give them different waters to measure in, and lo and behold, it worked in the tap water they gave you, but it didn't work in the other four. And so that's been the challenge in the sensor world, but we still believe that from a customer perspective, again, bringing value to the customer. If I want hot, reliable water, or I want clean water, pure water, being able to tell the customer that it's that our device has done what it said it is, the customer will value and will give us a leadership position. And then on the AI side, we've just been cutting our teeth in the AI world in doing looking at how we can do either predictive maintenance or even I call them smart data to our customer. Is there some information we can give our customer without having to go into their house and know everything about their house? And so that's been our use of the AI world, and then also beginning to explore it in our business side as well. Can we use it in our business to make decisions? That looks like that's readily available. It's just you can only have so many priorities in life, and that hasn't made it up to the top of the list yet.
Okay. It sounds like, from what you were talking about with your data provider and to a certain degree with sensors and moving into AI, that partnerships have been pretty important to you in getting things done. So do you have any words of wisdom on how to get a good fit with your partners?
I think that the key is to have realistic expectations with your partners, and also, particularly because in many of the digital world or like the sensor world, you're dealing with small, very small startup companies. One, they need money, and so they're pretty optimistic about what they have, and trying to get a clear understanding about where they're at and what do they really have left to do to be ready? Because if you go to a technology readiness scale, they all think they're ready to launch, right? Tomorrow. And dig into it and find out you're not anywhere close to launching. You have so many open switches to your product or to your business that it will never launch where you're at today. And so I think when you work with them, it's important to really get them grounded in what it's going to take to launch the product and where they're at from a technology readiness perspective, and then help them work through what do we need to do to increase that readiness level. And be prepared that they're going to need funding to do that. But it's definitely, I mean, you know, the partnering has been key for us as far as looking at alternative technologies and getting work done that, quite frankly, just don't have the resources to do all those things internally, nor the capabilities. I mean, there's a lot of capabilities out there that we can leverage elsewhere.
Okay. So shifting gears slightly, you know, how are you working to train your existing workforce with these new technologies? You know, you're in kind of the key Rust Belt demographic there, and I imagine you've got a lot of staff that have been with you for a long time, and you want to make sure that you're keeping that internal knowledge. So how are you kind of balancing that with these new technologies that are coming on board?
So probably the biggest thing as we bring in new technologies, we look at our existing workforce and try to understand if they have the capabilities to grow into that. And if they don't, then let's go out and hire people that have those skill sets that can bring it in and help internally help us grow more quickly than just learning on our own. And so we've hired, I mean, if you came here 5 years ago, you wouldn't see a data scientist. You wouldn't see you'd see one sensor person. Now we have a whole sensor department. So it's going on the outside and acquiring that capabilities if we don't view that it's something we can grow internally.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you try to take that long-term employee and push them into, you know, pick on like a data scientist, they might do okay, but they're not a data scientist. So let's go get a real one, and then maybe he can work with some of those people that aspire to that to bring them up to a higher level. But if we did it the other way, where we just tried to grow that person internally, I think it would be a long, slow road, and you really wouldn't get the capability you're looking for.
So how are you integrating these new technology-based hires with the existing workforce? Are you seeing some butting heads, or are they kind of integrating well?
So I think it's generally integrating well, but it's always a little bit mixed because you always have the skeptics that are out there. And so, you know, my advice to anybody that's new to our organization is you're going to be asked to do some forward thinking and new things that people may not always see the value in initially. But at the same time, you have to do those projects where you can earn your stripes, right? That they have confidence in your ability and in your skill sets so that they listen to you about the new things. And so it's looking for some early wins that build somebody's reputation so that they begin to see that they can bring value to other parts of our organization.
Okay, that makes sense. So I'm going to open the floor to questions in just a minute. And while everyone's mulling over their questions for you, I've just got one more. So, you know, based on what you've learned so far, what recommendation do you have for companies on their journey?
I think it's all about finding value to the customer, value to the customer chain. I mean, we don't have one customer. We have a whole series of different customers. And it's as you go down the digital chain, the digital strategy and that transformation, it's about how do I bring value to each one of those customers? And if I can't bring value, I think I need to take a step back and look more for value as opposed to viewing if I give them the product, they'll be successful. If they're not asking for it or they can't see how it can be used to drive value, then it's going to go the way of those smart home hubs I talked about.
All right, and we've got our first question. It's from Mike Super, who's with Covestro. And he asks, do you see a way to help consumers save money through an interface?
a little bit. They can save some money because, you know, in some of our electric water heaters, as an example, you can put it into a vacation mode when you're not around, and you can do that with an interface that's pretty easy to do, and you can do it remotely on some of our products. So I think that's possible. You can also, you know, there's some of our products today, they can interface with utility rate schedules. So there are ways to save money that way. One of the struggles traditionally in the water heating world is going to be that your water heater is a base load. So if I, at least where I'm at in Wisconsin, you'll see your electric bill go up in the summer and your gas bill go up in the winter. But if you're using a gas water heater, the gas water heater is always there, and you won't see that baseline. You won't see the impact of the water heater typically on your utility bill if you save money on it. So for example, say you can save 10%, that'd be $25 a year on a standard gas water heater. So that would be $2 a month on your utility bill. It would be pretty hard for most consumers to see that. And I think that's one of the real challenges. Now, with some of the things that are happening in the grid and in the electric space, perhaps, you know, that's where that rate schedule might be, but it's going to be dependent on the utilities, is that it's significant enough that it impacts the consumer's bill, and they can actually see it and feel it when they pay that bill.
All right, fantastic. The next question is from Carrie Ingold, who's also with Covestro. There's a big Covestro contingent here today. So are you bringing digitalization into the production plant to improve efficiency, monitoring quality, et cetera?
Yeah, that's actually a really ripe area for it. And I'm not the expert on what we do there. You know, we do our SCADAs, and one of my peers is really the person that does a lot of that. But that is a area that is easier to see value than it has been on the product side, for sure. And ways to save money and improve efficiency, right?
Yeah, definitely. So we have another question, and that's from Jeff Cope at RTI. And he asks, are your digital initiatives led inside or outside of your IT organization? Please elaborate on the reasons to set up digital teams inside or separate from IT.
I would say that in general, our digital strategies are going to be led outside of IT. Our IT organization is the make it happen folks. So they're the ones who are going to help us accomplish whether it's interfacing with our ERP system or interfacing with other tools that we have available to us. They're the ones that are held accountable, but the value to the customer or the value to the business is either going to come through engineering or product management or sales or some other function will be driving that value. And I think the strength in that approach is, as I said earlier, I think for the digital strategy to be successful, there has to be value to the customer. And a typical IT organization doesn't touch the customer, at least in our world. And so if they're not touching the customer, it would be difficult for them to really drive value to the customer. Now, they have to be an integral part of the team. It's not a black box or you just throw it over the wall at them. But I think the strategy needs to be led typically, you know, by somebody else other than the IT organization.
All right. Fantastic. I hope that answers your question, Jeff. I think that seems to be our last question. We'll give everyone just another couple seconds to get one in if they've got one. But in the meantime, I want to say a big thank you to you, Bob, for taking this on. Good to see that you're in your office. Oh, we had one more come up. And this is from Greg DeWicke, and Greg is with Kenna Metal. So he asks, how have you measured the value of the customer of how have you measured the value to the customer of the digital tools?
So on our product side, I'd say that the way we've measured the value is our ability to get them to connect their water heater using our connection tool. And as I said, that's where I don't think we've found the value yet because our connection rates are low. And then on some of our other tools, it's the number of interactions and people doing stuff with the tool. So if you go to a product selector tool, it's how many people would actually follow through the whole tool. We don't necessarily always have insight whether they purchased or not because we're disconnected with our customer. But the amount of people that we see use the tool from start to finish is a good way to measure the success of that tool. Whereas if they didn't find it useful, they'd probably bail on it pretty quick. And then in China, when we look at maintenance of our products, it's all around maintenance costs and what we can do there to reduce our maintenance costs as a result of using our tools.
All right. And I think that's it. So again, Bob, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. We really appreciate it. And I hope that you'll be able to join us for the Digital Futures Conference this fall, and we'll have lots more examples of different efforts that legacy companies like A. O. Smith are making in this regard. But in the meantime, thanks again, Bob, and I hope to see you all next month. It will be August 20th, I believe. It will be our thought leader interview then, and I'll have more information on that shortly. So thanks so much, and have a good rest of your day.
Bye.
Bye.